Well, good morning and greetings in Jesus' name. If you look on your programs, you probably see the name David Slabaugh from Michigan. And I am not David. I stand in his shadow when it comes to preaching. But he wasn't able to make it, and so we'll do our best here today. I don't know many of you. I saw a few familiar faces. I'm from central Wisconsin, the Bethany Mennonite Church, if you've ever been up to the middle of Wisconsin. And I have just, you always, if I'm listening to someone, I usually like to know a little bit about them. I am a father. I'm married to, my wife's name is Priscilla. She's from Traverse City, Michigan. And then we have 9 children, 6 boys and 3 girls that range from age 2 to age 17. And they're not with me today due to the short notice of filling in here. So I think my wife and I feel like we're in the thick of life, you could say. And I'm excited today to see so many youth here. I didn't know what the mixture of the audience would be, but very, very encouraging to me to see young people coming to hear the Word of God. And I hope I can encourage you this weekend with the small part I have with my 3 messages on finances. I was thinking about it as I took these messages on very short notice. Brother John had called me last weekend, and as of 5:30 Sunday evening, I told my wife, no, we're just not doing it. And then a few hours later, I sent a text message to John that I would do it. And I guess it's like those 2 men in the Bible that, you know, which is better, the person that says no and then shows up, or the person that says yes and then doesn't. But I was thinking about it. You know, you could argue that for a series of finance messages, you would look for a level-headed speaker that's of a sound mind and makes good decisions. And you could also argue that anyone who agrees to take 3 messages on short notice probably is not any of the above. So, but pray for me. I'm going to have to spend a fair amount of today studying. I had some other things lined up the beginning part of the week, and so this is message by message, people, okay? But as I said, my goal is to encourage you. I think this topic is one that could go a lot of different directions, but I want to encourage each one of you to be faithful in the community where you are at, and to bear the cross faithfully tomorrow, next week, next month. And I am not here today to present new big ideas on finance. If you're coming for a personal finance seminar or some kind of investing class, that's not what we're getting this weekend. Those are topics that I enjoy. I'm actually an accountant by trade, and have always been interested in finance. But I'm not here to really talk about the nuts and bolts of that as much. And I would also just add a disclaimer that while I have interest in finance, I am far from even a good example in that area. I've made That's okay. Yeah, I was struggling. I was struggling too with a little echo. Have made, you can probably learn more from my mistakes than from my successes. I'm a normal dad of a very normal family that has made a lot of very normal mistakes and maybe some abnormal ones as well. And my stories this weekend will leave a little doubt of that. But I am passionate about families, youth, finances, and the deep spiritual link between serving God and what you do with your money and with your financial life. There is a deep spiritual link, and if I achieve anything this morning, I want to connect those dots for you. And maybe you're sitting here and saying, you know, finances are not my concern this morning. I have bigger fish to fry, bigger problems right now than finances. I don't even care about them. So to that, I would just ask, well, what is your biggest problem right now then? To the middle-aged people in the room, maybe it's that you're too busy. To the youth, maybe you're struggling with improper use of technology, of your phone. You've gotten into trouble on your phone. You're looking at things that you shouldn't be. I'm not casting judgment. I know that happens. I've worked with a lot of youth. Maybe you're a parent in the audience that has a wayward child. That's your struggle. Maybe you're part of a church that you feel is drifting, and that's what's heavy on your heart today. And finances are just not the problem. But let's, for 1 second, think through those problems that I mentioned. You're too busy. Why are you too busy? Let's just back up a second. Does work have anything to do with it? Does side projects that you've agreed to do have anything to do with it? Does your lifestyle that you've chosen to live, and you have chosen to live whatever lifestyle you're living, does that have anything to do with how busy you are? The vacations that you've chosen to go on? I would suggest those are all financial decisions that play into if your problem is that you're too busy. Or your phone. If you're having problems with what you're looking at on your phone. And I don't have my phone on me. I was going to bring it. One of the things I needed to do before I got here is I had promised the boys that we would, every summer, we go canoeing up north on a river in northern Wisconsin, and that was pre-scheduled, so I did that Tuesday and Wednesday, and in the process, we go canoeing back in and through some rapids and so forth, and I ended up out of my canoe with my phone in my pocket, and so just yesterday, I actually had to buy a new phone. And so if you think of your phone, you didn't steal it, right? You made a decision to, I hope you didn't, then you do have bigger problems than finances. But you made a decision to buy that phone. You had to spend money and probably are paying money every month to have that phone. That's a financial decision. Wayward children. Maybe you just long to be able to connect with a wayward son or daughter, and they're busy at their job, you're busy at yours, and you just can't connect. Those are lifestyle and job situations. Or a drifting church. How do you define drift? Is it the clothes people are buying, the vacations they're taking, the trucks they own, the things people are doing, going places. Those are all financial decisions that go into maybe why you feel like your church is drifting. So I would suggest that spiritual problems are often strongly linked to financial choices. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 19 for a reading. I want to bring out that point here. Genesis chapter 19 and verses 23 to 30. And picture this scene. It's actually very vivid. You can let your mind run. The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. He was fleeing from Sodom. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in the which Lot dwelt. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. I'll stop reading there. So we have Abraham having his morning time with God, and he looks out over the plain, and this whole thing is a wasteland. There's smoke and brimstone and fire pouring out of heaven or up to heaven, and everything is turned to destruction. We have a pillar of salt, which was Lot's wife. Lot and his two daughters are huddled in a cave, potentially looking down on the mess, on the doom. And we could ask the question, how on earth did this happen? And just briefly, if you want to turn to Ezekiel chapter 16, it actually gives the answer, two verses there. Ezekiel 16 and verse 49 and 50. It says, "Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom." So here's the reason Sodom was destroyed: pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness, and neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. And so we look at Sodom. The sin here was pride, fullness of bread, abundance of idleness, and they didn't help the poor. At least two of those things are money related. Abundance or fullness of bread and not helping the poor, those are generally related to money. And you could even argue that pride and even abundance of idleness connect back to a misuse of money. So that's why Sodom was destroyed. Next question, why was Lot in the midst of that destruction? How did Lot ever get mixed into this? Let's back up to Genesis 19, if you still have your finger there. and we'll start reading at verse 1. And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early and go on your ways. And they said, Nay, but we will abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house. And he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. But before they lay down, the men of Sodom, even the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto him, Lot, and said unto him, Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them. And Lot went out at the door unto them, and shut the door after him, and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters, which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. And they said, Stand back. And they said again, This one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. But the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them, and shut the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. And the men said unto Lot, Hast thou here any besides, son-in-law, and thy sons, and even thy daughters? And whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand, and upon the hand of his wife, and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto them, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. And it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, Escape for thy life, look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain, escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot said unto them, Oh, not so, my lord. Behold, now thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life, and I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me, and I die. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said unto him, See, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city. I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou become thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. And we get back to where we started this message. So how did Lot get mixed in with this destruction? Well, he chose to live there. I mean, he was in the city gates. Not only in the city gates, but back then, that's where the elders, the respected people were. Lot was sitting there when the angels came to Sodom. He was kind of in charge of the city. He chose to voluntarily live there. So why was he living there? And this is where finance, spirituality, you sometimes have to dig back a little. Let's turn yet to Genesis 13, and we find this instructive set of verses of why Lot found himself in the gates of Sodom. Genesis 13, verse 1. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou wilt depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot made a good financial decision and chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. So why was Lot in Sodom that day? Because he chose to live there, but he didn't just choose to live there. He first chose to get land close to there. He went to raise cattle at the best land, despite proximity to a very sinful place. And it had a massive impact on his family and his whole, everyone that followed after him, really. In a few seconds here, I have some principles to go over quickly and a few practical points, but I want to make one key point before we do that. And that is that we all worship someone, some kingdom. We all fight for some kingdom. David Foster Wallace, who himself was somewhat of a, not sure if he was an atheist or a sort of a fumbling atheist or believer, I forget what he called himself. He later committed suicide, but he said in a famous speech, in the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is actually no such thing as atheism. There is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And it comes down to, if you whittle it all down, that there's only two kingdoms that you're going to, you have a choice of two to fight for and worship. The one is the kingdom of Jesus Christ. I hope that's why you're gathered here today. And the other is the kingdom of the world and Satan. When it all boils down, you are a soldier of one of those kingdoms' armies this morning. If you've grown up and are accountable and understand, are accountable to choices, you only have two, the kingdom of God and the kingdom of the world. And some things fit easily. You know for sure if you're into, if you're a drunk or into pornography or into bitterness or rebellion, we know for sure that that's the kingdom of Satan and the world. That's pretty clear, black and white. And we know for sure that if you're living a life of repentance and you've been baptized and you're following God humbly, we know for sure that that's serving the kingdom of Jesus Christ and wearing his badge, part of his army. But with finances, the lines blur a bit. And that's what makes them really, really critical. Is it wrong to buy land? Is it wrong to buy land close to Sodom? And I would suggest that many major financial decisions have the potential to lead to Sodom if they go out to sea. And that is what makes them so serious. And I beg you to give this issue serious thought as you live your life for Jesus. So quickly then, four principles this morning. Number one, I would suggest that today's financial choices directly impact tomorrow's choices. And what I mean by that is Lot chose land near Sodom. And that got him next door to Sodom. And so the next year, or however long it was, his next choice was where to live. And I don't know if there were intermediate houses where he got a little closer. But finally, he was into Sodom. And it came back to the original choice, setting the table for each step after that. And by the time we get to Genesis 19, he has some really difficult choices on his hands. He has to decide whether to let some angels get molested or his own daughters. Now, those are difficult choices. He has to decide between leaving his family in the brimstone or dying with them. That's a difficult choice. He has to decide whether to stay and bury his wife or keep fleeing. And by that time, these choices, he had to make those choices because he was there and it was happening. But had he made different choices at the beginning, he wouldn't have had to make these very difficult choices in Genesis 19. Today's financial choices directly impact tomorrow's choices. And this is for good and for bad. We're looking at a bad example, but it can be for good. I mentioned I'm an accountant, and I got to be a little careful on my time here. Is it 10:40? Okay. I'll try to not go over for sure. But I was going to school at the university in Madison, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in the message for youth Saturday afternoon. But as I was leaving, I needed a job. And I got this idea that I wanted to work in a city, not unlike Lot's decisions here. And I was thinking to maybe work in New York or something. There was, at that time, I think there still is kind of a church there, which maybe would have made New York a little more palatable. But I talked to my father, and he strongly encouraged me to come back home to Marshfield, our little town there, where I ended up getting a job at a really small accounting office. And as I look back on that decision, that's a case of a decision for me that set the table for a lot of other good decisions further along. Had I been in New York, I don't know if I'd be standing here this morning. And it even gets pretty basic. Here's another example. In Marshfield, when I was young, like I said, I love finance. And so I bought a duplex. I lived in one half, rented the other one out. And then I had this issue of, do I allow divorced and remarried renters to rent, live in my other side of my house? And there again, that's a case of you make one financial choice, and now you have another choice on your hand. One thing leads to another. And in 1 Corinthians, it says that God always has a way of escape for temptation. But I would suggest that you would consider that that way of escape sometimes is the original choice. God's not necessarily going to take care of you in Sodom, okay? If you've bought land close to there and slowly made choices and ended up in Sodom, I don't see God giving you a way of escape there. He did Lot, but he certainly didn't some of Lot's family. Sometimes that escape is the original choice. There's many ways that this principle plays out. Maybe if you're a youth girl here and you have a job that keeps you from being able to help other busy mothers that would like your help. Or you're a boy and you have a nice new truck that payments on it or whatever keep you from going to Bible school or going to CASP or serving on the mission field. Or men, like Lot, maybe you have a business that and goals in it that are just taking you away from your real goal of serving the kingdom. It doesn't have to be that way. I'm saying it can be that way. Or ladies, maybe you have a huge house project, a landscaping project, whatever it is, and you have these giant plans for your domain, and you know, then you need help taking care of that after it's all decorated and put together. One thing leads to another. Or on the good side, I was talking to my father-in-law last night, a man who has taught me many things about finances and using resources in the right way. And he was going up to help my brother-in-law. And I just said, you know, that's one thing I was thinking about in this series of messages is your example in your older years of choosing to back down from your work so that you could help others. And I said, that means a lot to the rest of us. That means a lot. And he said, yeah, you know, it's amazing. When you make that decision to back down, all of a sudden the opportunities, you start seeing the opportunities of where you can serve. One choice leads to more choices, some good, some bad, depending on the original choice. We've got to keep moving. Number two is that financial choices lead to a destination. And I think I'm going to just quickly read a few verses in Luke, just a few. Luke chapter 12 and verses 15 to 21. And he said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years, take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee, and then whose shall these things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. So here we have a man that made a financial choice in the morning, and by evening, he was standing in line in the judgment, ready to answer for that choice. It resulted in an immediate destination. And we could go to the rich young ruler, another beautiful, well, it's a beautiful story of love, a very sad story of rejecting that love. But basically, he came to Jesus and said, you know, Jesus, I want to follow you. What do I need to do? And Jesus said, you know, for you, you have this idol of your stuff. He had, let's just imagine in today's lingo, he had a 2026 GMC Denali with a fishing boat and a gun cabinet full of guns. And Jesus said, for you, those are your idols. You actually got to let them go. And he stood at the fork in the road and made financial choices that led to a destination. Not the one that he ultimately wanted to be at, but he made the choice, and the destination was just part of that choice. Often it isn't just one choice, but an accumulation of choices that add up to the destination, to the path you're going. And I'm not suggesting today in any way that it's wrong to own a barn or a boat or a truck. I have at least one of each of those. Now, my truck is a 1999 Toyota Tacoma, but that's a truck. But they are not my idol. They are not my idol. They are a means to an end of raising my boys. And I try to hold them with a grateful, open hand, and I pray to God that I could let them go if I was asked to. The difference is very subtle. Abraham and Lot were both wealthy and had a lot of stuff, but Lot heaped things to himself and was greedy. Abraham held the resources with an open hand. You take what you want, Lot, I'll take the scraps. Abraham found a destination of blessing. Lot ended in a wasteland. Financial choices lead to a destination. Number three, your financial choices affect other people. Who was affected by Lot's choices to move to Sodom? I mean, we can hardly count them. His wife turned into a pillar of salt. That's a fact, right? His daughters and sons-in-law died in Sodom. That's an effect. Later on, Abraham had to, well, actually, that might have been before, but Abraham at one point had to rescue Lot from, he had gotten mixed in with the wrong crowd and some kings had taken him captive, and Abraham had to put significant risk and resources in place to rescue Lot. And before this all happened, the meltdown in Sodom, we have Abraham pleading for Lot's life and for his family in Sodom. Lot's decisions had poor Abraham there agonizing before God to spare Lot. Today's financial choices affect other people. And this runs pretty deep and pretty close to home, my friends. If you have a spouse, your financial choices affect your spouse. And it can be from little to big effect. My wife and I, probably, and you'll hear more of this, tomorrow morning I'd like to talk about, change the title just a little, probably not for the finances for the elderly, because I hardly know how to deal with that, but finances for families. And that I know. Well, I have stories at least. And but my wife and I are very different in our financial decision making. And so, for example, early on, I had we had a date, and I took my wife to 2510 restaurant in Wausau. I mean, we're talking on the level of Perkins or whatever. It's not like Ruth Chris Steakhouse or something. And I didn't know any better, but she was deeply uncomfortable with that. For her, Taco Bell would have, well, hopefully not just lately, but literally Taco Bell would have been a place where she would have been more comfortable, and me choosing to go to 2510 actually put her through agony. That's a very small example, but when you get into houses, cars, and other things, your financial choices can have a deep, deep impact on your spouse. It can on your children. If you're a parent here with children, I have a son, and we went to get a bike for him. I helped him. I mean, I wasn't buying it for him, but I'm probably more of getting a, you know, quality bike. I really didn't give it a lot of thought. Thing led on to thing, and we ended up with like a $700 bike. Brought it home, and maybe here in northern Indiana, that's a cheap bike. But in our area, that was toward the upper end. And it created strain in our family, and led, you know, my wife felt like it actually just kind of changed even some attitudes and relationships and stuff. But on the flip side, then, I don't want to make it sound like I've made all bad decisions. I did the same son I had when he turned 16. I had an old minivan that I basically made him drive. And it was so bad that the youth group nicknamed the van Anxiety. And but you know what? That even, if you're a father here with youth boys, that warms your heart to hear about a boy driving a minivan that's called Anxiety, right? That has an impact. That has a big impact on the youth group and on a positive one in general. In church, building a mansion makes an impact on your church. So does living in a simple house. A luxury vacation makes an impact on your church. So does just sticking to simple campfires. Buying hunting land and second homes makes an impact on your church, as does not having those things. And I'm not saying necessarily that any of those things are wrong or not wrong. I'm saying they have an impact. On the youth group, if you show up in an $80 trend-setting sweater versus a $5 Goodwill sweater, that's going to have different impacts on the people. Both are going to have an impact, but it's going to be very different. Or $150 tennis shoes versus whatever mom scraped together from a garage sale. Those are going to have different impacts. They're both going to have impacts. And if you can be content to live simply as a young person, the impact is going to be massive on the people around you. Even your brothers and sisters, if you're a child living at home, your choices, your financial choices, believe it or not, are going to have an impact on your other brothers and sisters, especially as you get older. Back in the day, when the little hunting I did, we took an old cheap bow and arrow and whatever and went hunting. Well, I'm a clueless dad, but today that's not how we roll anymore. We really cannot hunt without range finders, binoculars, lighted nocks, expensive sights, releases for the bow, $200 camo gear. How did we get there? By people making choices that then had impacts on everybody else around that can't go hunting unless they have that stuff. I digress, but I just want to make it clear that your financial choices affect other people. Even their destiny. Can you be a shining example for good? Philippians says that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world. And I tell you, your financial choices are part of the way that you shine your light, either for dark or for bright. Number four, the last principle, is that money itself is not the problem. Misusing money is the problem. Money is a necessary and valuable resource. And I didn't bring it with me, but if I had a $20 bill in one hand and bullets in the other hand, I would suggest they're kind of about the same. They can both be used for really good things or really bad things. It's all, they're not good or bad in themselves, it's how you use them. I already said Abraham and Lot were both abundantly wealthy. And there's plenty of other people in the New Testament. Definitely the New Testament slants against wealth, but there are definitely many examples. Philemon, Lydia in Philippi, in 1 Timothy, addressing the church, Paul says, charge them that are rich. Ananias and Sapphira had land and money. And the Gentile churches seem to have had material resources where, you know, they were supposed to remember the poor. Even Jesus had a money bag that Judas carried. But the misuse of money is very much condemned in Scripture. And you misuse and abuse money when you hoard it, when you trust it, when you idolize it, when you revolve your life around getting it and keeping it. So treat it like you would a bullet. Useful, but dangerous. So just quickly, in the several minutes I have left, a couple practical points yet to wind up. Choose your destination, number one, and then accept the path. There's a quote that fools choose a path and accept their destination. That's what Lot did. Chose the land he wanted, accepted Sodom. The wise choose a destination and accept their path. That's what Abraham did. He was going to follow God. It doesn't really matter if I get some land or who gets what. That's all fine. I'm following God. He was looking for a city with foundations whose builder and maker is God, and he accepted whatever it took to get there. Keep your true goals clear and make finances fit those goals. Number two, practical point, intentionally work to minimize the cares of life and maximize faith. There's many busy people here doing good things. If you're a mother, hats off to you. My wife, you know, has raised 9 children, and I watch, and cares of this life and busy, that would describe her. But she still does a good job of setting that aside and just taking time for the children. And that, as if you're a teacher here or a father, youth, work to minimize the cares of life and take time to live out your faith and maximize it. And often it comes down to simple decisions, like coming here, making the choice to be here and learn about the Word of God. Being generous, even when you don't have a lot of money. Reading at least one verse before you fall asleep exhausted. These small decisions. Number three, sometimes you need to set back up a lot of dominoes to get your life back on track. And so, for example, I remember we used to have a problem at home where our Sunday mornings were so rushed. It would look like a nightmare to get the whole family together. And so the solution was that we should do baths and stuff Saturday night. But the problem is Saturday is jam full. And so we're just kind of working backward here, trying to set up dominoes. So we have to keep Saturday more open. But the reason Saturday's not open is because we're busy working all week. And Saturday's the only day we have to do things. And so to set up another domino, we'd actually have to work less during the week. And if we worked less during the week, we'd have less money to pay our bills. And our bills aren't going to quit coming unless we would change our lifestyle a little bit. And we'd have to set up that domino yet and adjust our lifestyle just so that we don't have a busy Sunday morning and can't make it to church. Sometimes that's how far back you have to set up the dominoes to get financial house in order. And then number four, look past yourself when making a financial decision. And this just comes back to think about your spouse, your brothers and sisters, your children, your friends. I don't want you to be paralyzed by every decision you make, but think about those people and the impact that you're going to have with the choice that you're making. That's my burden in my messages on finance, that you would use them to achieve the goals of heaven. There is no amount of gain or pleasure that is worth your soul or the soul of your children, friends, or your church. May God bless you.